Drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Good morning and welcome on in. It's the CDGA Golf Show here on ESPN 1000. Also, you can watch the show on YouTube as well, youtube.com. Search ESPN Chicago. Good morning to you, Mike, coming to us live from the NV5 up at the Glen Club in Glenview, Illinois, as the Corn Ferry Tour makes its stop in the Chicagoland area. And it is going to be a fun day up there for you. As we recap the Open Championship, but you're on the grounds now for a Corn Ferry event.
Yes, I am, and good morning, Tyler, and good morning, everybody in Chicago. And yes, professional golf is back in Chicago this weekend up here at the Glen Club up in Glenview, Illinois. And for those of you who have nothing to do today, I've got a great idea. Grab the wife, grab the kids, come on up to the Glen Club, because guess what? Right next door, the Glen Club, you know, facility, if you the shopping, the retail, has got an art fest going on, which is drawing all kinds of folks. So you could spend a perfect family day here. Bring up the wife. Let her go to the art fest. If the kids want to go that way, or bring the kids to the NV5. They have a kids section here that is to die for. You can go out and watch some incredible golf. The weather here is exquisite. It's perfect out here today, and the scoring conditions couldn't be better, so I'm looking for some low scores again today.
Yeah, and that's a place that the scores have gone pretty low in the past at the NV5 up at the Glen Club, so should be a great day of golf out there. We'll get to some of that and also talk to the tournament director as well for the NV5 Invitational presented by Old National Bank. Chris Montagano will join us at 10 o'clock right here on the CDGA Golf Show. But first, we start with the Open Championship. And, you know, we started the year saying Xander is the best player without a major, and he caps off the year with two. After he won the PGA, he won the Open Championship out at Royal Troon last week. And it was one of those things where he just kind of hung around the first three rounds, hung around, and then he put his foot on the gas on Sunday and never looked back.
And you couldn't have said it any better. He exactly did that. He shot 65 on a golf course that was so difficult, so hard, and he does it on a Sunday. And you know what's starting to happen? Xander has become the ultimate closer. He shot also 65 at Valhalla on the final day. So this guy's not backing into a position. Nobody's giving it to him to win these championships. He's going out. He has learned. He has paid the price. He is now learning how to win at the highest level and do it with confidence, do it with swagger. And the future for him now is so bright. He quickly went from, like you said, the best player not having to have won before to now perhaps being the most complete player on tour, including Scottie Scheffler, when you look at all four facets of the game. So Xander Schauffele, believe it or not, folks, has just grown up and matured in front of us in a way that the future is so bright for the next decade for this young gentleman.
Yeah, he was fantastic down the stretch. And just, I mean, he had the best Sunday round of anyone that was in contention there when he fires 65. And he just, I mean, there's no other way to say it, but he has just been steady all year long, and he's found ways to push past the finish line like we haven't seen him be able to do in the past. And now he's looking, and of course he now heads to the Olympics as well, so he'll hang over there in Europe. But, I mean, it's been quite the banner year for Xander Schauffele and the way that he has put together two majors in a season and looking like one of the best players in the entire world, when it was always jokes on Xander, he can't close on a Sunday, but he's found a way now. And like you said, he's put himself in an echelon that's, I'm not going to say he is Scottie Scheffler, but he is in that first rung right below it right now, because he's found ways to close in these final rounds that we haven't seen out of him before. And even the tournaments that he hasn't won this year, he's right in the thick of things too to potentially win. So it's been a great season for Xander, and I think one of the better major seasons that we've had in recent memory. When you talk about, you had Scotty go out and win at Augusta, you had Xander go out as the best player without a major, win the PGA, you had Bryson, the best player on LIV, go out and win at the U.S. Open, and then Xander caps it all off with a two-major season for him.
Yeah, and there, you know, the interesting thing is, going into this major, it looked like it was a Bryson DeChambeau year. He had finished in the top four in the first three events, but then the links-style course, he admitted it got to him. He needs to respect those more. He does not do well when the links-style courses get wet. According to what he was sharing with the press conference after his round, he prefers those courses dry, fast, and running hard. But for his calculations, the way he moves the golf ball and, you know, factors and figures things, the moisture really gave him a lot of headaches. So he ends up missing the cut, which is really kind of shocking in that way. But I will tell you, as the weekend wore on, and when we went off the air last week, Tyler, it looked like it was Shane Lowry's event to lose.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he did. The golf course, basically, we predicted exactly what was going to happen, and carnage. So Shane Lowry falls out. Billy Horschel goes to the top. He now has to sleep with the lead and has a tough time holding on to that the next day. But like you said, Xander, bogey-free on the final day. Now, that is really hard to do, folks.
Yeah.
You need to play bogey-free golf to begin with, but let alone do it on the final major at a links-style course under these conditions. He had six birdies on the day. But what's more amazing is he had four of them on the hardest nine, the back nine, and he was the only person to birdie number 11. And what I found, which I found really amazing, his first birdie on a par five all week did not occur until the sixth hole on Sunday, and he birdied number 6 and 16 to have the only two birdies on par fives. So what I'm saying, folks, he did this playing par fours and par threes, and that in itself is really, really good and really, really hard to do. But where he impressed me the most was on the wedge at 16 on Sunday. To me, told the whole story. You know, you got Justin Rose on the green and two, and Xander has to hit this soft flop shot from a tight little lie over a pot bunker, which is all into the green. And he just flipped that thing in there like it was nothing. And I think the average person watching TV has no idea how hard that shot is at that moment in time. And what it showed me is this guy is ready to win at any level, at any time, and that even includes defending his Olympic gold medal, you know, coming up this weekend or next week. So I just am so impressed watching Xander come from where he was at the beginning of the year till now. And I think he capped off, for what I consider, maybe the last three majors of this year may have been the best three majors of this decade thus far.
Yeah, I mean, specifically that U.S. Open, that was drama-filled. The PGA, extremely drama-filled. This was probably number three of the three, but still, I mean, it was, I mean, you just saw a shuffling at the top of the leaderboard. Nobody wanted to hold stake as that top guy, because it felt like it was just a Grim Reaper scenario where someone was going to overtake that person at some point, and it was tough playing this course with a lead, but nobody did it better than Xander Schauffele. And his poise and the bogey-free final Sunday, that was everything that you needed to see to kind of sum up what Xander's week was, and or season really was. I mean, this was a guy that went for it. I mean, I think back to that putt on 18 that he had at the PGA Championship where he went for it. He was determined to not leave that short and leave the door open for a playoff for Bryson DeChambeau to possibly steal it away from him. Instead, he goes out there and just goes for it and makes sure he does not leave that putt short. And I think that was kind of the mantra and the MO for him for this entire major season is going for it. And he was just lurking. And then Sunday, he slammed his foot on the gas, and he did not let up one bit on Sunday because he was by far and away the best player out there, and he went for every single hole. He went for it. Instead of trying to play what we sometimes we see, the prevent defense on a Sunday, he couldn't have afforded to do that, and B, I don't think that's something that, now that he's got a taste of what it's like to win majors, I don't think we're going to see out of him again.
Yeah, I think he is wired for sound now. He's learning and has learned what it takes to win and to win at the highest level. And I think when he was in his press conference, he was asked the question, how much did Valhalla help you get over the finish line this week? And he said it had everything to do with it. He took everything that he learned and experienced and once again was able to apply it to a new situation and once again come out on top. So that's 2 out of 4 majors for this young man, which begs the question, does he get any consideration for player of the year depending on how the rest of this playoff season, you know, goes about it? I think, you know, early in the season, it was a no-brainer that we thought Scotty Scheffler player of the year. That's already in the books. I'm not so sure anymore. I think there's still an opportunity for Xander to actually win player of the year. Now, mind you, he's got to have an incredible finish a la Scotty's start of the year, because while Scotty has one major, he still won the Memorial and the Players' Championship. Right. And to me, those are majors 1A and 1B. It's just amazing. We are watching 2 United States golfers heading into the Olympics, playing at the highest level, and I'm excited to watch the Olympics coming up and to watch how these two navigate the golf course they struggled with during the Ryder Cup.
Yep. All right, we'll discuss some of the other storylines that we saw from the Open Championship, including how Scotty finished his week. And also, I think the return of John Rahm was something that's worth noting as well. So we'll do all that when we come back. This is the CDGA Golf Show here on ESPN 1000.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app.
The segment brought to you by PGA Superstore. Visit any of our Chicagoland locations today. Tyler Rocky alongside Mike Gilligan. Mike is out at the NV5 Invitational up in Glenview, Illinois. We'll talk a little bit about what's been going on up there as well with tournament director Chris Montagano coming up at 10 o'clock a little bit later on today as well. Just kind of cleaning up some of the other stuff that we saw from this year's Open. I'm looking at what I saw from John Rahm, and he has his best day on Sunday, just kind of hangs around. And we talked about this, too, on Saturday as well. It felt like one of those tournaments where if you just kind of, all right, hold your ground for a little bit here and there, you're going to have a chance on Sunday. Now, nobody sees the moment quite like Xander Schauffele did, but John Rahm was one of those guys. He was kind of hanging around and went out and had himself a nice Sunday at 3 under and worked his way into a top 10 finish along with Sung Jae Im and Scotty Scheffler there at tied for 7th. So listen, John Rahm has really struggled this year. He's missed some cuts and some big moments. He's altogether missed some tournaments that he's had to withdraw from. And it looked like LIV was not the right path for him. But to see him get back on track like this is really good for golf, because right now golf needs a shot in the leg. I don't know if you've seen the television ratings on how everything played out for the Open on NBC and on Peacock, but golf needs a shot in the leg right now. And John Rahm being a if they can get a Rahm and Bryson grouping every single week, going up against Xander and Scotty or something of that ilk every single week, if those four are in some sort of contention at majors, you're going to get some good television and some good drama.
You nailed it right on the head. You get those four together, and the more frequently we can, the better golf is going to be. It's amazing to see what has transpired with John Rahm, but it's also really great to see how well he did fare at the Open. He showed a level of patience that we haven't seen all year at a time and at an event and conditions where patience is what it's all about. I think John has just hit the panic button too soon at Augusta and at the PGA, and I saw it firsthand at the PGA. He was out of sorts. He just wasn't comfortable, literally in his own skin, let alone with his setup and what he was doing and where he stood among his colleagues. But going back across the pond, being seen in a different environment, and I think seen in a different way by the fans and the people, and being, I think, more embraced, I think helped this very emotional, passionate player. And I think it turned out to be a great week for John Rahm and John Rahm fans. And I think he's a guy we really need to keep an eye on when we see this Olympic competition take place. It would not surprise me in the least if Spain wins a gold medal through John Rahm. His season could flip on a dime just like that. Unfortunately, that will be pretty much the end of the season that we'll see him as it relates to majors in the PGA Tour. But, you know, keeping an eye on what's going on right now, for example, at LIV, he's your leader right now. He's playing well over in the United Kingdom at the LIV event that started yesterday, and I think they're out on the course now. So I know he was taking a two-shot lead into the second round today. So John Rahm is starting to turn the ship around. And in his case, it's not quite a Titanic, but he's proven it's not a jet ski either. It's somewhere in between. But the good news is he's getting that thing going in the right direction, and he's going to be a dangerous man to watch in 2025.
I think the other thing with Rahm is we expected him to go to LIV and dominate, and that wasn't the case for him. And to see him just kind of eject really early on in his LIV career, and then it was reflecting in the majors, to see him, maybe he's just kind of figured out, like, his routine has certainly shifted. I mean, think about, he's going overseas more often to play in these tournaments. He's playing three rounds instead of four. Who knows how his practice regimen has changed, if it has at all. But he was not early on getting the results that I'm sure he would have liked and that we really expected from him over on the LIV Tour and in the majors. But now, if he, like you said, if he can cap it off, top 10 at the Open Championship and a good finish to the LIV season, who knows, maybe when he comes out here to Bolingbrook, he's in contention to win the whole thing from an individual standpoint. And I think that would really get him back on track. But and then the other piece to it, too, is, like you said, the Olympics. If he goes out and powers Spain to a gold medal, all of that could really shift the tenor of his season and the way that we talked about the year that John Rahm made the jump over to LIV.
Exactly. And I think if John Rahm comes to Bolingbrook full of, you know, vigor and confidence, and it's just brewing. Remember, John Rahm likes Chicago. He likes Olympia Fields. Mm-hmm. But so does Bryson. Bryson has grown up in Illinois, winning the amateur at Olympia Fields, winning his first professional event out at the John Deere. So he's won at LIV. So this is going to be, hopefully, one heck of a battle between John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau. Oh, and by the way, the rest of the LIV players that are coming too. And there are some good ones. And I think what we're finding out through John Rahm's inability to dominate on the LIV Tour right out of the gate does go to show you that the caliber of play that's over there is still really, really good. It may not be perfectly PGA Tour quality stuff, but I'm telling you, there's a lot of guys over there that still have the game they had when they left the PGA Tour, and in some cases, there may be an argument that some of these guys actually got better when they came over here. So there is a cadre of players that are absolutely still the best in the world, although their world ranking don't quite show it due to the politics involved in the game right now. But there are formidable competitors over there, and it's good to see that John Rahm is starting to return back to the John Rahm we used to know, even though he's now doing it under the moniker of the LIV Tour.
A couple other things that stuck out to me from the final round at the Open. If there's anything that caught your eyes, well, 312-332 3776 if you want to join us here. Shane Lowry, and both you and I were feeling really good about him as a potential champion, and just a complete implosion on Saturday where he goes six over and really punts away the tournament, because he was fantastic on Sunday. He fires a 68 Sunday, and to be honest, I mean, if he does not implode on Saturday, he probably wins this thing, because who knows how Xander handles a little bit of heat when there's someone going head-to-head with him the whole time. But Xander, I felt like he got to a certain point where he took the lead and then never really looked back, and no one really pushed him either. But Shane Lowry could have had that potential to give him some sort of push, and I just think that the way that Lowry imploded on that Saturday, I mean, it was ugly stuff, but his other three rounds were sparkling. I mean, 66, 69, 68, but that 77 really killed everything.
It really did, and you know, it's funny when you look at some of the players over the last nine on Sunday, you look at their back nine scorecards, and everybody, John Rahm, Shane Lowry, they only made one birdie on the back nine, although they made like four, maybe even five in the case of Rahm on the front nine, but they did nothing on the back nine. One individual did, and that was Xander.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing, just to goes to show you just how much better golf Xander played than anybody else on the final inward nine, and that's where he absolutely won it, and that's where Shane Lowry had a chance to climb back into this thing, but just couldn't do it. He mustered up a birdie at 17, but when he made the bogey at 11, to me that kind of sealed his fate, unless he could get something going. But all he did is, I mean, I say all he did, he just strung a bunch of pars together, which is really good golf, but at that level he needed some birdies to get back into this thing. And for me, as Shane Lowry went south, so did my fantasy team. I went from being number one down to, I think I finished 50th out of the several
still
thousand that played.
Really, but good finish. I mean, that pool's tough.
And yeah, that's my best finish career-wise in, what, 7 years of doing this. So I'm pleased as punch.
Yeah.
But it was just funny to see it up there one time at the very, very top. But, yeah, you're right. Shane Lowry really surprised a lot of us. I would have thought he would have excelled in the tough conditions, the weather, and all of it. And, yeah, I think he's as equally disappointed and surprised as we are.
Yeah. A couple other things. Justin Rose has never won this event before. One of those guys who you feel like would have won this event before, but has never won this event before. He finishes tied in a runner-up spot along with Billy Horschel. Friend of our show, Tracy Butler, has also chimed in as well. She texted saying how she just felt bad for Billy Horschel. And that's a guy 37 years old and had a real shot at this thing, went into it with the lead heading into Sunday. But could not close the deal. Still played fine on Saturday or on Sunday, but it just was not enough at the end of the day for Billy Horschel and Justin Rose, who also played very well, but not to the same degree. And he didn't have the highs that Shane Lowry had, but that Saturday kind of pushed him a little bit too far behind the pack. And if he shoots even par, he's in a playoff with Xander.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, a few other things that I listened and took from a lot of the players, and you know, you read between the tea leaves and the little comments and what did they mean by that, but I sense that there was a frustration by some of the players as to what draw they received and how Mother Nature truly affected their 36 holes before the cut versus many of the others. So I guess what I'm saying is, was it fair? Did everybody get to play the same conditions throughout the first 2 days? And the answer is heck no. And in fact, it was very advantageous for some and very difficult for others. And you know, sometimes that's just the rub of the green with link style courses and you know, the climate that they get from time to time and how it changes, you know, just within the hours. And so this was a situation where I think some of the players benefited from better conditions than others. And when you get those breaks, you got to capitalize them on them. And I think, you know, in this case, the guys that made the cut did. And those that couldn't, you know, survive the conditions obviously had to go home early. But, you know, it begs the question, is that fair? What do you think?
It's one of those, like, and I feel this way in all sports. I hate seeing the best in the world be penalized from weather. And it's something that, like, it's why I'm a big proponent for more sports. Baseball and football in particular should be played indoors, especially when it's playoff time, where weather will not be a factor in the game. And I feel similarly in golf. I feel like there should be a better, whether it's getting some of these guys to tee off earlier in the day because they have earned that spot. And I don't want to say these guys should be able to choose their tee times on their final day, but it should probably be something a little bit closer to that, because you, or at least go off in threes or something like that to circumvent some of the weather difficulties that you may be having.
Well, yeah, and you know, and I think Shane Lowry and that group really suffered the most on Saturday, because just as we thought when the weather came in, it created a harder golf course for that said group to play than the group that went off maybe an hour or two earlier. In other words, the weather as it turned, it made them play more holes into the wind, into the rain, than what would have been the case had the weather just maintained its, you know, its situation. And that's basically why links courses are laid out the way that they are. Nine holes one direction, nine holes back, so that you're always playing equally the amount of holes into and with the wind. But if you get those times that things turn, you know, those that can happen. You know, and when I was based at Kiowa down in South Carolina there in a links style course, built the same way, you could conceivably play a golf course where you're downwind almost 18 holes, or if the tide comes in and turns while you're playing, you could conceivably play most of your holes into the wind, and that makes for a really, really long day.
Well, remember what the whole thing that we were talking about too was, just the way that when we were given updates last Saturday, like Tristan Lawrence out of nowhere, he had an early tee time. The run that Sungjae Im made to get himself into the top 10. Adam Scott had himself a hell of a Saturday as well. That vaults him into a top 10. Ben Ahn, he has himself a nice Saturday. And like, these are guys who were making the cuts through the first 36 holes, but they were never in contention to win. And quite frankly, it didn't look like any of them would be in contention for a top 10. But here you go. And three of those names that I just spit out there were guys that had a chance to... maybe not win. I mean, in the case of Tristan Lawrence, he had a chance to win, and it was solely because of the Saturday round that he played and perhaps the draw that he got as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Tristan, there was a moment there that we thought he might be your winner. But at the same time, yeah, it just, the whole leaderboard Saturday afternoon, I'm not even sure you and I even mentioned Billy Horschel's name until he put his hat on backwards on right. Saturday. And the next thing you know, we go off the air, and by the end of the night, he's number one.
Yeah, and everyone has their hat
just
on
goes
backwards.
To show you.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, and then it got to the point where Billy didn't want to turn it face forward
right.
because he was playing so good with it backwards. So... superstition has its way in everybody's game.
Yep. All right. When we come back, I do want to have that conversation. Scotty or Xander for the player of the year, based on what we've seen so far. Obviously, we still have the playoff to shake out, but from what we've seen so far, we'll stack some resumes, see where things shake up. This segment brought to you by PGA Superstore. Visit any of our Chicagoland locations today.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
This segment brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience. Tyler Rocky, Mike Gilligan talking golf with you as we do every single Saturday throughout the golf season, 9 to 11 a.m. right here on ESPN 1000. If you miss anything, check it out on the podcast on that ESPN Chicago app or wherever you get your podcast. Just find the CDGA Golf Show. All right, Mike, as we look into kind of what we saw from Xander throughout the years, what we've seen from Scotty throughout the year, and both of them vying to be player of the year. I think if you stack the resumes, and again, I think there's a currency exchange rate to some of these wins, but you look at what Scotty's done this year. 6 wins, one of them being a major at the Masters, 2 runner-up finishes, and 14 top 10s. Xander, 2 wins, both majors, 2 runner-ups, and 12 top 10s. You just see the raw numbers there, and you think, wow, this is a Scotty runaway. But when you look at kind of where Xander's won, it I think, narrows the gap. But I'm still leaning Scotty in this thing for the player of the year on the tour this year.
As it sits right now, I agree with you. However, if Xander wins a playoff event and mm-hmm. then turns around and wins the tour championship and the FedEx trophy,
yeah,
I think you got to give it to him.
Oh, for sure.
But there's still a lot more. There's still a lot more golf in those playoffs. All Scotty has to do is win one of these, and he's your winner, I think. But if Xander closes this thing out with the vengeance that I think he has the capability of doing, I think you got to give it to him for the strong finish and the performance on Sundays and majors. And although the Olympics doesn't necessarily factor, I would love to see Xander and Scotty dueling it out for the gold and silver. I think that would be just amazing theater.
Yeah, it's one of those things like you can't use as a part of the voting process, but you know it's sticking in the minds of people as well. I think that with Scotty, he wasn't great on Sunday this past time, but how many Sundays have we seen where he is just a runaway train and really can't be stopped in his quest to lifting another trophy? I mean, the way that he's put everything together. I'm with you, though. I think that the winner of the FedEx Cup or whoever has the better FedEx Cup probably comes away with it, but it's kind of tough to deny the historic pace that Scottie Scheffler... I mean, he set a earnings record in June when there was still half a season to be played. Now, again, part of it is the elevated events and the elevated purses as a result of that, but it can't be denied the dominant pace that he has been on this year.
No, in fact, for those historians, this takes us back to the start that was anywhere as close to what Scotty did was in 1962, long before I was born or you were even thought of, Tyler. But Arnold Palmer won 6 tournaments before the calendar flipped over to July, and Scotty Scheffler is the next individual to do it since 1962. So what Scotty has done for the first half of the year is absolutely historic. And absolutely, something that we just don't see in any decade of recent decades. So, right now you're right. I think he has the edge. But this August is going to be an exciting time for professional golf to really wind up what I think has been an incredible season in golf all the way through and through, both from the tour season, the drama that's been around it. You throw in the full swing and all of that and the post Ryder Cup drama that led into this season. I think we're going to end this season with the idea that we cannot wait for 2025 to get going again. And that's where I think professional golf is. It's in a great spot, but it could even be better if LIV and the PGA Tour could get this thing back together again. But right now, professional golf is starting to really look appealing. It's just the networks need to see those differences rather than say on social media a la Bryson.
Right. And I think too, we do have precedent too. Matt McMaster, one of our producers, looked this up. 2 players before have won 2 majors in a season and not been player of the year. That's Jack Nicklaus in 1966 and Gary Player in 1974. So it has happened before where we've seen guys go out, win majors, multiple, and not end up as the player of the year. So that could very well happen to Xander here, and it's just because Scotty Scheffler has been so damn dominant for the other portions of the year and also has a major under his belt and very well could win a FedEx Cup.
Yeah, I mean, and it does happen, but it is a rarity, and that means somebody has to go off the charts and have a different type of amazing season that is, again, abnormal or something we haven't seen in quite a while. And just like Scotty's won a bunch of events, 1 major and a very big one at that being the Masters, Now, it may not have been done in the same fanfare as what we saw at the PGA and the Open and the U.S. Open, but at the same time, a major is a major. And I, of all four, the Masters is one I would covet more than maybe any of them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, Scotty is and has been the best ball striker. We have been saying that for the better part of 2 years now. That's not going to change. It's just whether or not Scotty can get it in the hole and has that putter going. And we've always said just an average putting or above average putting exhibition by Scotty Scheffler, and he's going to just run away from everybody. And so that has been his Achilles heel, if you will, is that putter. And if he has the putter going over in France and the rest of the tour season, it's going to be a one-man race. But if he continues to do what he's been doing with the putter of late, he's opening the door and letting the door open for others like Xander. Or you never know. You know, we've put Rory kind of away based on his performance at the British Open. And I think this Olympics is going to say a lot for him and where he decides to finish the rest of the tour season. If he has a bad Olympics, I think his season is pretty much over. But if he responds with a podium finish, he's going to factor large when it comes to East Lake.
Yeah, and looking also at think of the finishes we've had this year in majors. Everything's been so close at the end. One-stroke win at the PGA, one-stroke win at the U.S. Open, two strokes at the Open Championship. Scotty had the only runaway major victory when he won the Masters by four, and it's because everyone else around him was crumbling around Amen Corner, and he just powered through. And his margin of victory is the equivalent of the combination of the other three margin of victories in major tournaments this year, 4-4. And maybe some of that gets factored into it as well, because Scotty's been so historically dominant this year that right now I think it is still his to lose, even though Xander has two majors this year. But again, there is still plenty of golf left to be played, and the FedEx Cup events and ultimately the playoff, the championship is going to loom large when we get there. And I think that will probably be that'll have the final dictation over who ends up winning this thing altogether.
Well, and I agree. One thing, though, and an interesting stat that I read, is that up until Bryson missed the cut, I mean, he was going to just annihilate everybody through the course of a cumulative four majors on, you know, based on four majors, 16 gross rounds of golf, and you add them all up, and what's your total? But that kind of went out the window when he missed the cut. Xander, on the other hand, has played in every round this year, made all the cuts, and has the best cumulative score for the four majors, four rounds in each major. And get this, the next person closest is 15 shots behind him. That's how much he dominated the majors this year without us really noticing, because, you know, in the Masters, the Open, you know, while the PGA, he obviously was front and center. But, you know, at the Open, he had a good Open, but he didn't win. A good U.S. Open, he didn't win. But when he went to the Open, obviously, you know, he pulls it all back together again and wins that. So 15 shots over your colleagues like that in the majors, that is strong.
Right.
That is really strong.
Absolutely. All right, when we come back, let's spin around what's going on the tours, the 3M, also what's taking place out at the NV5 as well. We'll do all that when we come back. This segment brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club, home of 42 practice bays with Top Tracer technology.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, talking golf with you as we take a look at what's going on the PGA Tour as we speak. We've got the 3M taking place, the 3M Open up in Minnesota right now at TPC Twin Cities. Taylor Pendrith is your leader right now. He is at 12 under. Matthew Neesmith at 10 under, two strokes off the lead. Andrew Putnam, Jacob Bridgman at 9 under. And then how about one of the local guys, Doug Gim? He had a fantastic round yesterday, a 64 that he shot. That he has him in a tie for fifth right now with Alex Smalley, Jonathan Vegas, and Lonto Griffin. But good to see Doug Gim putting together a nice round there after he went really low after a decent day on Thursday, but Saturday, or Friday rather, he had himself a nice day.
He did. The pride of Buffalo Grove. Well, good to see it, and I'll be keeping an eye on him today because this is the perfect type of an event for a Doug Gim to come through and break through in a big way, and I'm sure there's a lot of people heading up to the, you know, the land of 10,000 lakes to check him out this weekend.
Yeah, and then one of the other local guys as well, Nick Hardy, he was actually inside the top 10 after his performance on Thursday, fired a 67, but struggled and fell back yesterday, 72 for Nick yesterday. He's already off and running through five today. So, yep, we've got guys on the course as we speak. And what is taking place up at the NV5 right now, Mike?
Well, we have Ryan Girard as our first round leader. Ryan has started out pretty nice with a little 64 on Thursday. But yesterday, cards a career low, 10 under 61, and takes a three-shot lead at 17 under, shooting 125 for the total 36 holes, thus breaking the 36-hole tournament scoring record here at the Glen Club. And he is now, it's the second time he himself has shot 125 or better this year out on the Korn Ferry Tour. So Ryan Girard is getting ready to take that next step and move up to the big boy tour. But he's at 17 under. Then we have Joe Weiler and Chris Ventura at 14 and 13 under, respectively. The 2016 U.S. Amateur Champion from Australia, Curtis Luck, is tied for fourth with a few others with back-to-back 65s. So the former U.S. Amateur Champion is looking good, who turned pro in 2017. And his one win is the 2020 Nationwide Children's Hospital that was played in Ohio back in 2020. So we've got a lot of good golfers out here today, and will be this weekend. So like I said, you know, we'll talk to Chris when he comes back. But if you have nothing to do, folks, or if you are interested in seeing tomorrow's stars today, come on up to the Glen Club because the weather is absolutely perfect, and you're going to watch some of the you know, as I say, you know, tomorrow's stars today put their games on display, and it is just so fun to watch these young guys hit it and how far and how straight and how they can move the ball at will, left to right, right to left, hit it high, hit it low. These guys have got game that you just don't see, you know, from time to time, even when you go to the PGA, because these guys are hitting it actually further. They're just learning how to win and how to get the ball into the hole so that they can prepare themselves for that next level. And the Korn Ferry Tour has been an amazing, you know, tour to develop and mature and bring these new stars to us. And, you know, just as a reminder, folks, Scottie Scheffler started his career here at the Glen Club with a win back in 2019. And the Glen Club has produced a few winners over the years to the likes of Cameron Young in 2021 and Harry Hall in 2022. So Harry Hall is, in fact, one of the players that has won twice already this year. He gets one more win on the Korn Ferry Tour, and he has an automatic exemption up to the PGA Tour level. So, you know, a lot is going on here for the careers and the futures of some of these bright stars and soon-to-be regular household names. So give yourself a chance and get to know them and come on out and grab a nice little cool drink and start walking around. You can get up so close to these players and actually almost feel the shots and see the thinking and the strategy that goes in with he and his caddy and the conversations that go on. You can be privy to all of this where you won't be at your typical PGA Tour site or a major championship. You just don't get this kind of opportunity to be up and close with tomorrow's stars today.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk with Chris Montagano, the tournament director for the NV5 Invitational, presented by Old National Bank. That's coming up next. This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.